Welcome to Conscious Communication, the podcast that can help you improve your company's culture and better your team's communication, helping you build more significant relationships. Now here's your host, Philip Bogolub. I have the privilege and honor of talking with Grant Hecker. He works for a company called Danaher. He is the VP Chief Enterprise Architect. I like that name, by the way.
Thank you.
At Danaher. I think you just started there a few months ago, correct?
Yeah, I did.
And he's been everywhere. He's been at Walgreens, General Mills, Lowe's. He's also a certified coach. I want to talk about co-active coach and what that means exactly. But what I found cool about how you're communicating with the world is the company, Danaher, deals with water quality, I guess, when they first started. But now you're more in the diagnostics and the life sciences, which is close to my heart because I was an engineer in another life working in the X-ray tube manufacturing field. And yeah, I was there for a long time and I helped support it and travel around the world. And being involved with something very close to people's health care and how you're diagnosing, because I was never in the forefront. Nobody knew who I was, but I was very proud of it when I knew that things were working well. So that's one of the things that I wanted to talk with you about. But first thing I always ask is, what was that serendipity in your life, that accident, that coincidence, that you became chief enterprise architect, or you even went to school for this? What was that thing that where you're at now that might have said, hey, I need to go in this direction?
Well, I'm going to be a little bit provocative in that question, because I think for most of my life, I've always known technology was it for me. I started programming in BASIC, all caps BASIC, in third grade.
Oh, wow.
3-2-1 contact. I was told by my mom growing up that I need to get out of my computer world and move in with the rest of society. And I think we all see that the opposite played out.
Yeah.
So it's been kind of funny to me. Like, you know, I remember my high school math teacher said, well, what if you don't have a calculator with you in the future? And of course, now we have the TI-89 emulator on my phone. So it's just hilarious. And this has been a journey from the beginning. So when I first started, it was, coming into technology and software development and coding, which is where I just had a natural affinity. But it wasn't where I wanted to end up. I saw the chief architect at General Mills, and boy, was that cool. They got to help shape the technology direction for the whole company and inspire people with how technology can enable the business. And I thought that was so neat, but it was a long journey from where I was to there. So I started by going, all right, I'm going to start with technology development, move into tech leadership, PM, and then eventually into management, but stay on a technical track. And kind of keep my eye open for the opportunity to eventually shift into architecture. So General Mills, they didn't have architect titles. So I just got projects I ran that had the biggest integration challenges, the biggest sort of new business challenges, like shipping custom fruit roll-ups to customers for their kids' birthday parties, right?
Yeah. So
make a custom website, integrate it with the SAP systems, and build a direct-to-customer model in what was a B2B business, right, of CPG. Consumer packaged good company. So they had to learn how to be direct customer. So that was like a fascinating kind of example of the kind of projects I would do to try to have a broad view. So I moved into management, and then I was leading a SharePoint organization. Lowe's gave me a call to do the same thing at a bigger scale. And then once I was in Lowe's is where the opportunity to act on my vision really came together, because I sort of solidified their collaboration platform, which is what I came in to do. And they're like, actually, we need someone over in HR. HR, that has nothing to do with my path. All right, let's try it. So I jump into HR, and it was one of the best moves I've ever made in my career, because I learned how it really works. I learned who really runs the companies. Actually, let me ask you, who runs the companies?
HR.
Admins.
Oh, yes, they do all the work.
Has access to the executives.
They do all the work.
They manage the calendars of the leaders, and the leaders spend their time with is how things move forward.
Interesting.
And that, I mean, it's a little bit of an exaggeration, but I think people don't understand how critical admins are to managing change, to really shaping direction, and to how people are influenced.
Well, I think the old way of admins was just typing.
Oh, yeah. No,
right? And scheduling a few meetings. And that's what it was forever. And I think because of technology, it's completely changed. And I didn't think about that. You're right, because yourself, you don't have time to schedule stuff, and other people that are busy with other meetings, you're going to meeting to meeting to meeting, you have to depend on those admins. I'm sorry. So go ahead.
So I learned that. It was just kind of a little stretched out there. But as I was in this HR role, I was helping them basically figure out what the new organization looked like for a new CIO. We were designing it. We had a org design firm in helping us build the new CIO structure. So I saw the org charts as I was actually leading the effort to build them as they were coming across. And there was a new job that was just getting created to drive the rollout of architecture. So being in the job I'm in, I have the first access to it. I go talk to the VP of that particular space and say, hey, you know, this job's going to end. It's temporary just to do this HR change. Will you make a bet on me and let me do the job part-time and see if I can earn the job? And he did. And that was my big break. I actually got to become, it wasn't like a promotion. That wasn't the hard part. It was getting an opportunity exactly in the job I wanted to be in without having to come into a more junior level or anything of that sort. And I had enough relevant other experience, like being on an architecture review board, but not leading it, and driving an architecture for collaboration, that let me make the case to come into that role for he'd make a bet on me. And for that, after that point, it's been a 10-year playbook of really just rolling out architecture by building community, which is the number one thing you have to do as an architecture leader, is engage the technical community. We have two jobs. We are the chief coach for the technologists, and we're the chief family counselor for the CIO staff. I mean, that's effectively where architecture sits.
I have to break off and just talk to the conscious communication audience right now. So listen to what he just said. He had a vision. He knew what he wanted to do. And he took advantage of the opportunities that popped up. Because, I do a lot of reading. I'm sure you do also. There's no bad opportunities. You take the opportunity, it didn't work out. You do another one. But you don't know that one conversation, that one job, that one thing. And those things, I believe, are serendipities and coincidences. So to my conscious communication audience, pay attention to what he's saying. He didn't get to where he's at by accepting other things. He just learned and learned and learned until the next door and the next door and the next, and suddenly, boom, and that's how he ended up here. So I have a question pertaining to, first of all, I got to share, I do like this, Danaher, and how the root Dana you already know this, but I'm sharing this with everybody. The root Dana is an ancient Celtic word meaning swift flowing. I love that. An apt descriptor for the nimble mindset and rapid flow of innovation. Now, that popped in my head as in, because he's talking about the river and everything. He's got a picture of the gentleman that, I think he's the creator. What was his name here? Rainer Blair?
He's the CEO.
And he had a picture of him somewhere on the website. And this comes from the Western Montana, where this river is, because there's a philosophy called Tao Te Ching. And Lao Tzu, who taught this, talked all the time about water and how life can flow and all, going with the flow as opposed to against the flow. And I thought that was very interesting. So Danaher has a business system, so they focus on people and self. Now, how does that co-active coaching, could you explain what that means? And how does that kind of work into what you do?
Yeah.
How you make a difference?
The co-active coaching model. So one of the things I'll share, when I was at Medtronic, there were two tracks of investment in high potential leaders. One was an investment in sort of strong contributors who are always going to be sort of leveling up what the company was doing through their own work. And the other was investing in people who were passionate about developing others and leading through others, which is more my speed. So the first thing is I got a coach, and I kind of learned how to shape my thinking and get more aware of the people around me, more curious, more open-minded. There was just so much that individual helped me. Her name was Paula. She runs a company called Disrupt Development, and I learned a ton through that. And then I had the opportunity through this advancement kind of a top talent program, which I'm humbled that I was selected to participate in, to learn how to become a coach. And I went through the co-active training. And there's really three worlds to it. There's fulfillment, which is where do you want to go? What do you want to become? Like, it's the thing that you want, right? On the edge of the horizon. there's balance, which is like, how do I want to be in this moment, right? And then there's process, which is going deep into the ocean in the submarine, feeling the depth of a particular emotion. It can be helpful with grief. It can even be helpful with joy, but extreme emotions, process is where to live. And so the first two I talked about are kind of speedboats skipping on the top of the water, and process is really getting into the depth. So why does this relate, or how does this relate to the role of a chief architect? Well, it's really about understanding the folks in the community and really the bigger person involved, right? Not the scope of the individual problems. Problems are fascinating, right? But a lot of times we lose sight of the broader arc we have with the people we're interacting with. And that's one of the things I think coaching has really helped me do well is, great, we're here to talk about this little thing and this little challenge, but how are you, right? What's new in your life? These are very simple questions, but we'll skip those so often and we miss the opportunity to build a deeper relationship instead of just solve a problem.
Interesting. Interesting. I love that. I had a feeling this conversation was going to go directly into the mind. That's why I was looking forward to this conversation.
Me too.
So, I'm sorry?
Me too. I was looking forward. I've seen your shows and they're quite engaging.
Oh, really, thank you.
Here with you.
And it's the whole thing, the mind is always an amazing thing because we tend to forget the most powerful thing on the planet is the mind. And when somebody says, well, this is going on out there, I'm like, well, what do you choose to think about? What do you choose to talk about? What do you choose to sleep about? You know, all these things make a difference. And when you're communicating with people, getting in touch with, you know, I was talking to somebody in HR a couple of interviews ago, and I said, it's human resources. The resources are human beings. And that we need to get more in touch with that instead of, you know, the old way that, and I'm not knocking, it wasn't bad, but it was not very engaging.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now you can engage someone to say, hey, what do you think? How can you, you know, find out what they keep gets them on fire? Maybe they're in the wrong position. Maybe they to be over here on this team because you didn't know as the leader, I didn't know that he knew this stuff or she didn't know this stuff, whatever. And then suddenly, boom, you just fired them up and you just gave them an opportunity. Or as I say in my business, empowering others empowers ourselves because that is more of an energy source than anything because, I mean, a lot of times you might not know you're doing something for somebody, but if you just see somebody with a smile on their face or their body relaxing, going, wow, I didn't see that in myself. And that's a good relationship you want to have where you want to see something in somebody else that they didn't see in themselves.
So powerful.
It is. And one of the things with the company resources, said small company soul. I love that. Big company resources with a small company soul. And in the philosophy for conscious communication, it's called Ajanoi, and it stands for your soul knowledge. And I have a whole philosophy behind this that I'm teaching people, and that's very close to my heart. When you say company resources, small company soul, how do you define that?
Well, I would say that we're very centric on the companies that comprise us, right? So it's really about not losing who they are in joining the larger Danaher organization and supporting what's made them be successful today, but just giving them some tools. We have this thing called the Danaher Business System, and it's how we really run our business. It's inspired by Toyota and how they put their Toyota way. You may have heard of that. And we really try to put some structure around lean, which is just getting a lot more efficient in how we deliver, and grow, which is really about making sure that if we invest in this, that it's going to result in an investment outcome that's better than the alternatives. And doing that in perpetuity is what makes Danaher so great at what they do. They embrace the companies they buy, and they embrace the people that they bring into the organization for who they are and what they're there to do. And they support them, and they believe in those assets, both people and company and IP and everything else. And they really try to facilitate through their DBS process the improvement of both the individual and the company. And then there does come a point when companies also exit Danaher. Like you mentioned how we were, like the water quality, and actually we're in the process now of selling the water quality businesses. And that's a part of what Danaher's evolution is. We buy companies that are maybe delivering beneath their potential, we bring them up to their potential within an aligned portfolio. We won't do it for things that are outside of our space, right? And then after a while and they've matured, we actually spin them out and find the next wave of companies that we can mature. And that's how the Danaher, with the exception of maybe last year, 18 years in a row has beat the S&P. And I'm only in my second month joining this organization, but it's fascinating to see how that model has worked and played out in reality. And I love what it's done for the people in this organization and the companies that have been a part of the Danaher family, both present and past.
In the company I used to work for, I was there for over 25 years, and I loved it. Every day I got up, I was enjoying abundance. I mean, I traveled all over the world. I met everybody. By the way, and I've said this before on other shows, there's no difference between anybody in the world at all. I'm talking about individuals. I'm talking about other stuff. We're all the same. We all want the same thing. Nice family, friends, all this stuff. But I always loved going everywhere and making a difference and doing things that because when the company then got bought by a big corporation and put one of the last two X-ray tube manufacturing companies in the United States out of business, that's all they were doing was trying to put them into their mindset. They weren't buying not necessarily intellectual property, but for lack of a better word, you know what I mean. You're buying the experience. And what they wanted to do, well, you've got to be like us. But one size does not fit all. And they just destroyed it. And it was a shame because the company was built on interactions. You're talking about, you know, enterprise architecture and coaching and personalized and DBS system. And I'm going to talk about the Kaizen stuff too, that they didn't get it. And within a couple of years, because I saw the writing on the wall, and that's how I ended up here, which I'm not complaining. I was meant to be. Many things in my life.
Yeah, things don't happen to us. They happen for us.
Ah, say that again, please.
Things don't happen to us. They happen for us.
I love it. But you have to be in that right mindset to notice it. Right. Otherwise, you'll just fly right by.
Right? I had that happen so many times where a change is coming. Like, this is public news at Walgreens Boots Alliance. I was the chief architect of Walgreens Boots Alliance, the whole organization. And I had really effective architects leading Walgreens as their chief architect and Boots as their chief architect. And then a change came. They were going to sell Boots. It was in the public news. Everyone
forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah, that was going to happen, right? Well, I'm the chief architect of Walgreens Boots Alliance, and I have effective leaders beneath me. Do I get scared and start to like act out of fear and try to maneuver to kind of weasel back into the Walgreens side of it and kind of ask my chief architect to take a role alongside me? Not necessarily a demotion, but like when I think about what my values are around building others and helping them grow and develop, being a part of their upward momentum, especially people who perform, who are, you know, strong drivers, like the people who were helping me lead in those two companies. That's not my values at all. At that moment, you kind of have an upper out in my mind, right? I'm either going to go to a different opportunity inside that same organization, or you kind of have to find something new because you've got to prepare. You want to live the legacy of the longer arc, right? To me, having one of those two leaders or those two leaders succeed as the chief architects of their respective companies was the reason, was the purpose behind my role. So for me to move was kind of the right thing to do. So I spent 6 months preparing those leaders for that, and both were ready. I just needed to give them some of the context of the things I was working on and give them more opportunities. So then when I did a little bit of shopping internally and externally and found my best fit was at Danaher, which it's been fantastic. I just, again, did the company decide to sell Boots and that happened to me? Or did it happen for me? An opportunity to advance the people that I care about, see them succeed, and an opportunity for me to find my next chapter. So it's a perspective that's hard to develop and keep, particularly in really tough situations. But there usually is a little bit of a silver lining that if you can find, it's a through line that can help you get through some significant periods of change.
I agree. When it got towards the end, I wasn't sleeping. And that doesn't happen.
Right.
And I was very upset. My wife said, okay, I know you're not happy there. And I, like I said, I loved it. And it was one of those things that you become comfortable being uncomfortable in something you're familiar with. which is a bad job or a bad relationship. It's the big two things that I can relate to. I think most people can't. And I was like, we talked about it. And I started, Grant sees my recording studio behind me, started playing music again. And there's other things I'm doing. And it's like, okay, opportunity. What's the opportunity? My wife's like, okay, you know what? The kids are all grown up out of the house. You got these things you want to do. Why don't you pursue them? See what happens. Because if I don't, how am I going to know? How am I going to know it's the right thing? Because I believe everybody's got a little bit of a purpose here. And you got to get in touch with that. And I love the idea of you want to, it'll be a little uncomfortable. You change jobs. It's a little uncomfortable for a while because you have no new folders, as I call them. You have no new experiences yet. And look at the opportunities to grow. And when you're sleeping and you're dreaming and you're, because I believe sleep is like the most important thing in the planet more than anything in life. Because everybody sells albums.
Yeah, you and me both.
I don't want to watch Night of the Living Dead before I go to sleep. I want to listen to, well, during the day maybe, but I want to go something positive because those are the things that you troubleshoot and you meditate or whatever you do in your life. And then suddenly you wake up in a positive manner as opposed to a negative manner. But I love that whole thing because you're making a difference. You're empowering others and you're like, do I just go and fit in? No. Let me see. And it's a methodical thing. You have to discuss it with your family, your friends. You just don't jump. And you find out, and that's how you find out where you're at. Now,
I have so much gratitude too to Walgreens, to Mitch Hunter, worked right. I mean, they were all amazing chapters that grew me. And I think when you can develop that positive perspective and find the resonance and some of the change you're experiencing, it really helps to develop that perspective of appreciation. And when you have a mindset of appreciation, the world looks totally different.
I couldn't agree anymore. I mean, it's just, that's amazing. You said, I refer to it as the right frequency. You got to trust your gut. If you believe, if something's not working, your body's telling you, your mind's telling you, then your body reacts. And if you're not sleeping or whatever it is for you, and it's not good for you, you know, life is not, we're both in the medical field. I think the average lifespan for men, my wife's an actuary, so she gives me this data. It's, I think, 82, 83 years for men, and on women, 85, 86, 87. That's not that long, you know? And, you know, even if you live to 100, that's still not that long. And it's really important. How much do you want to be? You don't want to be unhappy. I mean, things happen in life. I understand it. But find out what the positivity out of that maybe bad situation is, and then you can pluck something, but you got to be in that right mindset. Okay, this leads to a good question for the next one. So your health care for the body. My philosophy and belief system is healthcare for the mind. How do you get those to mix together with what you're doing to get the best out of people and the businesses you guys are involved with?
Yeah, it's a really good question. One of the things, I'll just be honest, I've been at the company at just a little over 2 months, so I'm not an expert in all of our different lines of business yet. But I will tell you, as a broader healthcare professional, the two live together so closely. If, for example, just thinking about some of the programs that we were looking at in Walgreens, the new Walgreens Health business that they're working to create, a lot of that can be focused on behavioral and mindset types of challenges. I guess one of the obvious ones that you might lean on is the habits, right? Healthy habits, healthy eating, right? You've got some of the things like even just smoking and other things that you want to try to stop doing. There's a direct correlation between, you know, how your mental health and some of the things you do to cope in the world and how that relates to your overall health, whether that, you know, smoking and eating are pretty literal examples. But one of the ones that we all like to just ignore and pretend isn't real is stress, right? If you're carrying tons of stress, if you're in a toxic work environment, if you're in a fear-based culture, you notice where that energy lives in and the tightness it creates and that healthcare conditions it creates, right? So it's very hard to do, and it's very unrealistic to think you're going to do it all the time, because every employment opportunity, every project is going to have peaks and valleys where there's going to be natural points of stress and natural points of joy, and that's the human experience. But if you look around and you're in a completely fear-based culture where more days are filled with that anxiety and concern and then fear, fear's the real one to watch out for, right? You are not at your best if you're living in fear. There's this really funny little decision box I've seen. It says, do it. And then it says, good decision. Like, no problem. I got it, or I'm scared. And then the option if you're scared, what the decision is, do it scared. But still do it.
Just do it. Doesn't matter.
Do it either way.
I like
it. Do it scared.
I like
it. And I think there's some real power to that, but it's very hard to pull off. So, you know, you kind of have to ask yourself the broader questions. Is the fear coming from me, or is the fear coming from what the environment is trying to create? Is the fear an intentional motivator from the environment that I'm in to drive outcomes? Or is it my anxiety that would be this way no matter where I am? Or is it specific to some other scenario? Understanding and localizing the source of that is important, because otherwise you might exit trying to escape a challenge and find yourself back in the same challenge, because actually, this is where the problem was. It wasn't out there.
No.
So, and it takes a little bit of self-searching, and usually you can find some peers and colleagues to play the mirror for you to kind of figure out what the source of that is. And you'd be amazed to, like, trust people. Seriously, just try it. Trust them. You're afraid to tell them you don't feel comfortable about X. You're afraid to tell them you're looking for a new job. Forget all of it. Trust people, especially the people that have really invested in you. You will be amazed. You will not be let down. Once in a while, something will surprise you, and then you just don't trust that person again. But when you can allow the people around you to help and shape your perspective, you become more self-aware, and you can start to understand where the source of that challenge is and what's the right approach. Do I need to work on myself? Do I need to work towards a different opportunity in the company I'm in? Do I need to leave the company and find something totally different? Those are really important things. But I do think, no matter what, know that living in constant stress and fear is not the right answer. And it's okay to experiment to find which path is the right way. But it's very important that you do, for exactly as you mentioned, or you end up seeing your current mental health start to drive your physical health.
And you hit it. You must have been reading my mind here. But because, anyhow, what you think about, you become. What you talk about, you become. What you sleep about, you become. And what you watch, you become. It's all the same thing. And so if you do something to me and I react to you, and you did something intentionally or unintentionally, good or bad, and I react to you, you're now in charge of me. We do this all the time. So you did something to me, unintentional or intentional, good or bad, doesn't matter. And we do this to everything in our life. I was doing that for the longest time. I didn't realize it. And those people don't, some of them, or most people, I don't believe, are mean intentionally. They're just doing something you don't know. And they're not thinking, if they knew that I was reacting that way, they'd probably go, I didn't mean it that way. You know, but it doesn't really matter. We're reacting to things as opposed to thinking in our mind, okay, got the conscious, the subconscious, which is the conscious, the negative mind, subconscious, the creative, imaginational mind. Where am I coming from? Why am I there? So one of the things in the process for the philosophy that I've designed is the two W's. What am I supposed to get out of this? What am I supposed to learn from this? Then there's PNM and DAT and some other stuff. We're not going to go into that. But first question is, what am I supposed to learn? What am I supposed to get out of this? You did the same thing with Walgreens. I did the same thing with the old job that I was at. I wanted it because it was, and there's nothing wrong with this. It's safety. It's comfort. I don't want to have to go look for a job. I don't want to have to do this. It's much, I still know people that are there in the new design company and they're miserable. And I don't say anything to them. One of them was my friend. I give him a lot of crap about it. I said, go get another job. But he's good friends with me. So I understand him, but I completely relate. But you're comfortable being uncomfortable in something you're familiar with. And you're talking about stress and fear. Fear is debilitating.
Debilitating.
Absolutely debilitating. And again, the two things people can really...
Anxiety is the root of fear, right? It's a subset of fear. It's the same thing. You're mad, you're glad, you're afraid, or you're sad.
Yep.
Right?
And those things will just drive you. And it's okay. It's okay. You need those emotions, but you don't need those emotions to drive you, because eventually it starts here, right? And then your body starts breaking down. You get indigestion problems. You stub your toe. You get a flat tire. You're yelling at everybody all the time. You're constantly in that. Was that something I read about? We're in your fear mode that the lion's attacking you, you know, in the prehistoric days, but they turned it off and on. It was different, but now you're living like that all the time. And it's just totally destroyed. And it's not so much because people say, well, we get older, the body's dying. Well, of course it is. We don't It's the way it's designed. But it's more of accumulation. If I stick you under an x-ray machine and radiate you for about a month, you'll die from cancer. You don't do that all the time. You need, over a period of time, if you started the stress at 5, you'd probably be having all sorts of physical problems by the time you're 20. So
right.
It's just a matter of fact, when you get into the real world and those things start affecting you, eventually, you know, I got shoulder problems, I got eyesight, I got indigestion, I got acid, you know, and not everything, but a lot of things are just caused out of the mind. Another good, you're leading right into these questions. Did you know I was asking these questions?
So we just are on the same wavelength.
Exactly. Friend. Same frequency. I like it. So creating the right mindset. Now, I know a little bit about the Keynesian philosophy because being in the corporate world, we went through a lot of stuff, but the audience might not know. A part of what you do in the company is the Keynesian philosophy. Can you kind of give a 50,000 foot view of that?
I don't think I can. Just to be honest, being 2 months in, I'm not sure maybe.
Oh, I didn't know. I was unsure.
Color.
Okay. Are you familiar with all
Kaizens, like as in continuous improvement? Because then I can speak to that.
So wait, I'm sorry. Say again.
Are you speaking about Kaizens, like continuous improvement? I can speak to that.
Yes.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Sorry about, you know what? I phrased it wrong. I said philosophy. I always say philosophy about everything. But
okay.
Yes, for
no,
what you do.
Fine.
Sorry.
I always try to say what I know and don't know. So it's just comfortable for everybody.
It's the same thing I've always done. Everything. If you don't know it, say you don't know.
If we believe in a philosophy of continuous improvement, and that's really about just iterative improvement over time. And that's really the focus of most of the things Danaher does. What can we do to drive out muda, which is really waste, right? What can we do to take things that are working well in one space and grow it across the organization? What can we do to just start to invest in a way that goes after a goal by taking a problem to a solution and, you know, using tools like 5Y? How do we take a messy workplace and use something like 5S, and then which is a process to start to, you know, sort and shine that into something that's more sustainable, that anyone can come to that desk and do whatever tasks are required. So it's really about building sustainability, really about building iterative improvement, growing towards well-defined goals. It's about being more planful in your work. So we spend half our time in plan or more before we start to get into actually doing and building. And I've been in other organizations where they don't spend any time in plan. They say go, and their people go 100 miles an hour in those hierarchical organizations, but they're doing it in the wind direction of a tornado. So the tornado's only moving 10 miles an hour, with the people in it are moving 150. And that's been, so, you know, both are effective, but one's a lot harder on people, I think, than the other.
And it is very true. I refer to that as the dog chasing its tail. They might catch it once in a while, but it hurts, and then they get exhausted, and they got to take a long sleep and a long nap, and they start all over again, and it's not getting anywhere. And that's, you know, it's like when I was in the factory, you know, the sales guys would give the how much they would sell, and then the marketing department would say one thing, and then the engineering department would just say another, and then the factory would say another, and I just sit there as the support engineer going, this is not working very well, like a ping pong ball going back and forth. And not that I made the difference, but I made my suggestions coming from someone who is out in the real world, seeing what's really happening with the product. It's a different perspective, because when you're sitting in that, as they say, the glass tower type thing, you see it from one perspective only, and you forget the customer, what's going on out there, how is this integrating into the medical equipment, how is it saving lives, you know, all these little things. And you just need sometimes a little bit of a kick in the pants. So I wanted, if you could go over the DBS, the Danaher Business System, the 5 core values. I saw the video. I didn't want to go over it. I wanted you to explain it, because it's all about getting the best out of someone, and how it's all about what can they make a difference with. How can they make a difference? Because when they feel that they're listened to, and they are actually going, "What do you think?" and that comes out, it makes not only the team better, but you might hear and see something you didn't know to begin with. So could you go over those 5 core values, so that they're very cool and—
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, it starts with people, and we believe best team wins, right? So it's about having the right people and the right skills and supporting them to be able to drive forward. Then we have the planning phase, and right, that we believe innovation defines our future. So that's really about looking at what we should be and what maybe sometimes we invent problems so that we can solve them. Other times we're looking at real industry problems, and that's all whole part of the DBS way. We also look at process. And this is where I didn't realize it was also a Kaizen, which is true, but Kaizen is our way of life. And that means taking things, looking at it through just a pragmatic lens and figuring out how we can iterate and remove waste, improve efficiency, improve the value percentage of the work we're doing compared to the wait periods of a product. You'll be amazed just how much time goes to just waiting or waste in process for steps that are important, but they aren't really driving an outcome that the customer cares about, right? And then performance, right? It's really about customers talk, we listen. You know, I talked about solving problems. Well, some of those problems come from our customers. So we really have these ideas of quality, delivery, cost, and innovation that ultimately helps us realize our shared purpose of what we call realizing life's potential.
Interesting. You mentioned the same thing about the customer like I did. Is it benefiting the customer? Because making a medical product in a factory, there was waste. And, you know, you duplicate. I don't need to do this 2-3 times. If it works, it works. I don't need to do it again. And if it's, you need to do it more than once, let's start figuring out why, what's missing. And here's something I was just thinking about when you were talking about, you know, because everything's about electronics and digital and technology, but you're more into the personal. So I refer to stuff in analog and digital. How do you sometimes find that what we're doing digitally, and I don't know what that example would be, that may be more analog, a human interaction would change and replace that and make it more efficient?
Well, look at what we're doing right now. I didn't have to drive halfway across town to have this conversation. So we're literally taking an analog moment and making it digital and having an outcome that's even better. It's we didn't have to have all these wonderful listeners drive over and bang on your drums, right? We can all hang out together and have a very little inefficiency, very little Buddha waste the time in the car. We just get the outcome, the conversation that everyone's here to listen to.
That is, I'm bottling that. I'm using that unless you trademark it.
Yours now.
That is so true. I didn't see it that way because even though it's digital, we're analog people. So we're interacting with that. I think one of the things that really has changed, and I think is detrimental to human contact, is customer support. Mm-hmm. And at least, unless you have a different outlook on this, I'm curious about that. So a lot of, you know, the interactive office has been going on for a long time. My wife has been working from home way before the pandemic ever happened. And she'd go into the office once in a while. Now she's back to that. Do you believe that you can have this kind of interaction, have the same energy when you're in a creative stage?
Absolutely.
How? Show me. Tell me.
Okay. So, real example. I have a very good friend, Rich Corbridge, who's the CIO for Boots. We have never met in person. I was intending to fly over to the UK many times when I was at Walgreens, and they had, you know, budget challenges, or they just announced that we might be selling, so it'd be a bad time to go, name it, right? So I never actually got across the pond. He and I developed a friendship right from the beginning, and we wrote articles together. We championed a lot of organizational change together, and I would consider him a close friend, even though we haven't spent any time across a physical table together. The same is true with coaching. I learned how to coach the first part was in person, but the second, the certification leg of my coaching journey was virtual. And I'm still in contact with people that I went through certification with 3 years ago. We talk monthly in some cases. And so, you know, I find that this human connection is so strong and so adaptive that our energy can connect through multiple means. And this is just another channel to really create together. It doesn't replace other channels,
right?
But it can create new opportunities that wouldn't have ever existed before through the richness of what digital can give us.
I guess I'm thinking of it in a different manner of, you know, when we're designing x-ray tubes and, you know, doing testing in the factory and you're on actually the equipment. I mean, there are some things you can't replace, but, you know, to your point, we're getting an energy. We have an energy. We haven't sat here going, what do you right? talk about next? So you're right. It's the right frequency. And that's why it's really important for me to focus on when I'm having people on the show. It's got to be the right frequency. If it's not, it's a waste of time, because if I'm not getting something out of it and you're not getting something out of it, the listeners are going to see that. They're going to hear that and going to go, all right, next. Why are you even talking to this guy? So let's see here. Next one. I think you kind of went down how you create team unity. But lastly,
there's an answer,
go ahead.
It's a little different, actually.
Oh, then so, go ahead.
How to create team unity. I find that it's really about getting people to see and appreciate one another, which is a little bit difficult to do. For example, if you have a bunch of technologists in a room, they know their stuff and they can be a little bit combative with each other, right? They can try to, you know, one up one another a little bit. There's a little bit of subtle competitive behavior. It's not negative. It's not bad. It's kind of a little bit of healthy competition in most cases. But sometimes that healthy competition can result in sort of unhealthy relationships where people feel stepped on, or, and the person who might have gone a little too far in that little dance may not realize it. And that's one of the things that is kind of that coach role. It's super important that I double underline the thing that architect just said that someone else may not have heard, right? Because they were doing something else and maybe not so much emphasize the over contributor in the room, even though it's right or she's right. You know, that their points are already well established. So trying to create appreciation on both sides. And then as we appreciate and start to build trust in one another, what are we all interested in? What outcomes do we want? So I find that getting people to articulate where they want to go and show them to one another, you start to find the common points of resonance. And when you have resonance on topics and you appreciate each other going after that topic, you have unity. And that is what will ultimately drive some of the best performances, trusted environments going after shared outcomes.
Interesting. Yes, I agree on everything. I don't even think I have anything to add to it other than when I first got to my last job, they were doing testing bench. And I said, you need to buy the computerized tomography. It's just a fancy CAT scale. Well, you probably know what that is. So it's a fancy X-ray machine. And they said, no, we're not going to invest in that. We're going to do da-da-da. Okay, fine. All right, Phil, go out and do the, we did the alpha testing, did the beta testing out in the field. The tube died. It died in 5 seconds. Put it on, died. Did it again, died. I pulled everybody into a room and all the management. And I said, look, you hired me as technical support. You need to get the equipment because this is never going to work. And I did it in a way that is going, I didn't want to go, ha ha, I told you so. I'm not going to have anybody buy in running around saying, hey, I'm right, I'm right. I learned at that point in my life, come in there and going, we need to make this successful. Let's get the equipment. I'll go out and find the equipment for you. When I finally left there several years ago, they had about, I don't know, 17 or 18 CAT scanners there, because every new product they bought, because if they don't spin it, centrifugal force, all this other stuff going on, it's going, you don't know how it's going to work. And putting it on a bench, you need to have patience, alpha testing, beta testing. I was reading about some of the things you guys are into it with vaccines and different things and how to modernize it and make it more efficient. But you still need to go through those processes and procedures to get it. How do you get it there more efficiently and quickly, but efficiently and reliably? I mean, there's always plus and minus with everything. But that's definitely something that's important to do, not getting the team unity. I didn't think it the way you were saying it. Now, I would like the audience to have something from you. What is your personal philosophy? What is your positive message that you would like to pass on to the conscious communication audience? Something that's inspiring, something that could say, I didn't think about that. Take a few seconds.
Yes. I guess my challenge to your audience is, are you pursuing the right dream, right? Take a step back. You're currently on a mission. To what end? And are you going to be clapping for yourself at the end of that race? And I think it's an important question that we all keep in our minds as we are traveling down this wonderful journey of life is, did we hop on the right train? Because I just encourage you that it is never too late to get off at the next station and buy a ticket to somewhere else. It's really under your control. So if you're in a bad environment, if you're chasing the wrong dream, guess what? You get to wake up tomorrow and try another one. It's awesome. That's this life we're in. So while that might have sounded like, oh, geez, I have to kind of feel bad. No, it's actually, you should be feeling great because life is full of these opportunities to wake up and go after something different. And if you are in the right place, are you putting all of your energy where you want it to be, right? So cool. We're in the right ecosystem, but am I focused on some of the things that are just noise when really my purpose is over here? What have I done today to advance my purpose? Today I'm advancing my purpose because I'm bringing a message to all of you about connecting and being intimate enough conversations you have with your colleagues, because that is what's so important in building deep, rich relationships. If more of us did that, the world's a better place, right?
So no doubt.
I'm chasing my purpose and having this conversation. Ultimately, my goal is to be one of the lenses that helps people see and pursue their purpose. That's what I wanted. So that's my hope, is that you're pursuing yours and that you're putting your energy into it in a way that is actually fulfilling what you want.
Excellent. That was excellent. The only thing I don't even know if I'd say add to it, but yeah, just...
Go ahead. No, we can all add.
But well, you got to be in that right frame of mind. But if you get, how I define it is, if I feel too comfortable, that it's kind of becoming rote, not that I'm not making a difference, but it just becomes the same thing every day. Take a look at it. Mark it down. Think about what you know, when you're sitting in a meeting, maybe you're thinking about this or that, something different than what you were doing before. And then broach that subject with your manager. Maybe create a position. When I joined the company I was at, there was no technical support engineer. It didn't exist. The department was Department of One. And somebody knew me from years ago and said, I didn't go in till the third time he bugged me. I didn't think about it that time. And it's like, come on and just interview. 2 weeks later, I got the position. And I was working at the University of Chicago. I loved my job. I was the head of engineering there and support, and I was working, doing, I loved it. But again, if those opportunities pop up, there's a reason for it. Worst case is you don't do it. But if I was just getting those tingles and I met the people, and it's kind of like this conversation. It was so natural. I didn't even think about it. So kind of be aware of that stuff and have that mindset of, where are the opportunities? How can you grow? Because when you're happy and enjoy and abundance, it reflects in your relationships, your friendships, your family, everything you do in your life. And if you're traveling somewhere, and I know it's kind of a different kind of example, but you're traveling somewhere and the plane is 2 hours late, I don't think about it. It's like, what's my opportunity here? Should I read my book? Should I write something down? Should I listen to something positive? Because there's all
got something more else than you had in your day, right? What's the gift?
Exactly. And you could waste the time being in the angry mind, being in fear and anxiety, and oh my God, this, my vacation's going to be ruined. I'm like, no, you're on vacation, or you're going to your job. I used to do a lot of traveling, and it sounds like you did a fair amount of traveling also. Things happen. That's out of your control. And I learned, I'm like, what am I getting? Because I used to see people at the gate just yelling at the poor person behind the counter, like the person behind the counter created the bad situation. I'm like,
get in there and find me. I need to go now.
What are they supposed to do? The plane's not here, or the engine's broken. I mean, you know, things just happen. And I was in that same boat at some point in my life. And I realized, what am I doing? I waste a lot of time being angry on all these outside situations that I can't do anything about. What's the opportunity? And I just love that idea. Grant, thank you for the interview. It's been wonderful talking to you. I really appreciate you being on the show.
And thank you for what you're doing. I'm just so proud of I'm humbled to be here, and I'm so gracious about thinking about what you're doing for this community, right? It's there's not enough of this out there. I mean, I think the energy you're bringing to this community is incredibly important, and I'm just so pleased I could be a part of it today. Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. Thank you for being on here. And to my conscious community audience, remember, it is more important to express your thinking thoughts and not the thoughts you are thinking. That is what is called conscious communication. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to Conscious Communication. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and recommend on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcast. You can also get more great information at ConsciousCommunicationPodcast.com.